Welcome, everyone, to episode 2 of this season of Mention and Dispatches. I'm Brant. I'm your host. We've got a couple of repeat guests here. Mike is back from the great wilds of northwestern Ohio. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thank you.
So, stray question here. What's on in the background right now while you are recording the podcast?
Absolutely nothing. I'm sitting down here in my home office in the corner of my basement.
Ah, so you don't even have a window open to hear the owls or anything, huh?
No windows open. I do have a walkout basement, but it's actually pitch black out already, so.
Oh, okay. Voice that is very familiar to our podcast listeners. Jim is back. Cyrano, how you doing tonight?
I am doing well. Thank you very kindly, and good evening to you both.
Background for you. What's on in the background at Casa del Cyrano?
Oh, I am quietly just waiting for the Bucks season to end. We are 1 minute and 28 seconds away from yet another disappointment for the great city of Milwaukee this sporting, and really all of 2020. It's been kind of junk.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot of that going around.
There's the great meme that I think I shared it on, either I shared it on our forums or I stole it from our forums and shared it somewhere else, but it said something to the equivalent of, can we all just agree that no one had the right answer back in 2015 to the question, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Right. So, absolutely.
I think there is no one that got that answer right. So, incidentally, in the background here at the Game Den, I've got Captain America Civil War on mute in the background here. So, tonight, we wanted to come back now that, you know, we've had a summer of doing this, but more importantly, we've had most of, you know, several seasons of doing this, going back to even before the plague hit us. We've had Jim on here before to talk some execution-level details about Tabletop Simulator and some distributed gaming. Mike has been a pretty regular player in a lot of Jim's Saturday Night Fights games, but Jim has also done stuff with Wednesday Night Warfare and the occasional Sunday Night Fights and a variety of other games. And Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, there have been times where you and your son in the same house hop on two different computers and use Tabletop Simulator to go ahead and play a game of Commands and Colors, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, it makes setup and teardown a lot easier.
Look, I want to be very clear. I want to set this out at the very beginning. I own the games I play. You know, this isn't, you know, Tabletop Simulator is not a theft mechanism, but I would be awfully hard pressed to be persuaded to play a block version of Commands and Colors Napoleonics at this point.
Is that because of the blocks or because you just think the little bitty figures are really cute?
Well, there's a lot of things. Number one, everybody plays the blocks wrong, incorrectly. they send them on their edge, which is communism. And again, an offense to our way of life. But more relevantly, number one, the aesthetic is so great. I stole it wholesale from a wonderful blog, Prometheus in Aspic, which you should all check out because he's a delightful gentleman who plays a lot of Commands, Colors, Napoleonics. And he played this way, and I wanted to play this way long before I knew about Tabletop Simulator. And so it let me do that, and it's a wonderful aesthetic. It's, you know, we finished up on Sunday. We had an impromptu, really, game of the Grand Battles Borodino. Six players on a 15-foot scale board, 50 feet wide, with 2,000 figures. And, you know, that's awesome. And then to your other point, I did have to set it up, I guess, but in terms of the guests, the setup lasted about a second, and the takedown lasted no time at all. So that's awful hard to beat.
It's going to be real tough to take Tabletop Simulator on the road to Origins next summer, though.
Yeah, I know, and it's a real adjustment for me because this is certainly already, we're at 30,000 feet talking about the effect here. I'm very curious to know what effect, if any, Tabletop Simulator, Vassal, Tabletopia, all these other distributed gaming platforms have on actual gaming. There are some people I know that won't go back to tabletop that I've spoken to that said they regard now tabletop as a secondary choice to playing a tabletop game on their PC. I know other people who have said, oh no, the minute this is over and I can play with my friends face to face, that's what I'm doing. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. I guarantee you this was the case before and it's the case now and it'll be the case after. The tabletop experience will be far more limited. Far more.
I wonder if we're going to start to see something akin to the old first-person shooter LAN parties in tabletop simulator mode, where six guys all gather for games. I say guys, six people. They don't have to be guys. Gather for game night somewhere, and everybody brings their laptops, sets up around the dining room table, fires up tabletop simulator, and sits there and trash talks in person while playing on the laptop with that tabletop game.
I think it depends entirely on the game, but I think that's more than within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. The other thing I'm curious, I have no doubt that such a thing exists. You would know better than I, but how long until we start seeing the tabletop simulator only releases of air quote board games start to come out? So
yeah, they're already out. They're already out. There's a group that is, well, and it's coming in stages. There are a number of people, David Thompson, friend of Armchair Dragoons and an all-around good guy. Please buy all of his games. They're wonderful. But David Thompson, he is already exclusively playtesting on Tabletop Simulator. Cole Worley, he of Root, and actually his better game, John Company, just because I like the theme better, and now Oath, all those were playtested exclusively on Tabletop Simulator. Were made available, in fact, in playtest form on Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah, but all of those eventually had a Dead Tree edition. Like,
yeah, they did, and that's my point. And so I say that's the first step. The next step is the more interesting one, because at least right now, is almost impossible to monetize a non-Dead Tree game in Tabletop Simulator. What you see in the DLC, a couple of reasons. Number one, there's so much free stuff. And so there's a whole lot of noise to signal in the tabletop space. It's a free-for-all. It's kind of the difference between the Apple Store and the Google Android Store, I'm told. I'm in the Apple Store. But the Android Store isn't a curated space. Well, neither is the workshop for Commands and Colors, which is why it's almost impossible sometimes to find what you want. But it's also very difficult to monetize. And so, you know, Cole still has the idea very much, and I'm sure David does too, that he's going to put this out there and make money on the Dead Tree version. You're absolutely right. I don't know as anybody has cracked. There are a lot of people out there that are trying to make a business case for their game in Tabletop Simulator. But to your point, it's not to have it that be the end state. It's to convince a publisher to pick up their game. Board gaming as a concept, as an industry, is in a very, very strange place in terms of the number of people who are offering games, the amount of games that are out there in an incredible quantity, and trying to get yourself seen is a little bit tricky. So to answer your question, no, I've not seen that final step, but I've seen intermediary steps. But there is still definitely a big one to go.
I wonder if your next intermediate step isn't some sort of tabletop exclusive expansion to an existing game. Like, is there, and I'm spitballing here, right? We have absolutely zero inside intel on this, so nobody write a headline based on something we're saying here on the podcast. But I'm wondering if you would get something like Cole Worley releasing a potential fifth faction that you could swap in for one of the other four for Root, right? If something like that were released as a tabletop simulator exclusive, where you don't have to go through all the manufacturing of all of the pieces for it and the physical movement of components in order to sell it, is that something that would get enough people to pay attention and go, oh yeah, I need to go get Root on Tabletop Simulator so I can go get this fifth faction to be able to play with it? If that's not the intermediate step that might be missing before a full Tabletop Simulator conversion of something.
And this is not my market. This is, you know, nobody's selling this stuff to me, but I will observe. I would love to know the answer to a fairly simple question. Root is available on the PC, on Steam, in a lovely animated version. It's an actual implementation for the PC of the great little coin. I call it baby coin Root. And it's a great little game. It costs like $15. I've played it a ton. I've actually played it a ton now, just sort of learned the systems. It's been available in an authorized version from Cole on Tabletop Simulator for a while now. And I would be interested to know, and as such, it's free. It's not a DLC. I'd be curious to know, and I don't know if there's any way to count it, which has been played more. I would say the same thing about Scythe. You know, have people played the official Scythe game, or are they playing it as a tabletop game? Because I don't know that this is the topic you want to get into here, But I think there is a real fundamental question that we're confronting about our games. I think it's one of the really big long-term issues. When you play Root, when you play Scythe in the PC game, and that game sweeps up all the administration, all the bookkeeping, all the chasing that goes on in a board game, you start to wonder how much of the game is left.
Yeah.
And how much the air is sucked out of the experience. And I'll point this right at our hobby. I really question Advanced Squad Leader. I realize they're very different games, but I was playing a bunch of John Tiller Software's Squad Battles games, which have a ton of modifiers and movement points and scenarios and statistics and all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, it flies along.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. You know, you're right-clicking. Or shoot, let's give a pitch to yet another friend of, you know, friend of the Armchair Dragoons, Lock and Load Publishing. They're, you know, David Heath and that crew, they're putting out all his stuff online in animated versions. And when all of a sudden all that bookkeeping is gone, man, those games are short.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that I was ever particularly, I'm no expert at Lock and Load Tactical or, you know, the other games, really good games in those series. But holy cow, play Lock and Load Tactical sometime in the digital version, and you tell me how long those games take compared to how long they ever took on the tabletop.
Yep.
So
yep.
All this by a very, very round way of saying, I think when I started doing this over a year and a half ago, there were a whole lot of people that were just not buying it, that were, this isn't real board gaming, this isn't real tabletop gaming, this isn't real minis gaming. I was one of a small group of people that were kind of out there alone. Now that the COVID has shown that this is a valid way to do things, and shoot, I even see mainline podcasts, board game podcasts, the Dice Tower and others, talk about playing it. They still don't like it. That you can see they still don't like it because it's not particularly good for the industry.
Yeah, yeah,
but
totally.
You know, and they are functionaries of the industry. But I will tell you this: it really is going to raise some questions about what do we value in a game when so much can be just automated out. And I find that just a fascinating thing. So have we seen the intermediary step where somebody offers something like that? We haven't. The next step, the closest we've gotten is, Lock and Load, David Heath, but also Modiphius, the people who did Fallout and Siege of the Citadel and some other mainline game releases. They've released taster versions of their, they've said, look, here's the game. This is the game you get in the box. It's just doesn't have all the figs, doesn't have all the scenarios, doesn't have all the stuff, but it's a taste. It's a demo, but it's everything the game is. And we want you to see it in Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah. The first hit is free.
That's interesting. Right. Your first hit is free. Exactly. And that's been very neat to see and very interesting to watch. It just serves to remind me that I only like certain kinds of games, but that's a different point.
So, Mike, as a player in all of this, like you've evolved as a player in all of this alongside Jim kind of evolving with sort of building and running a lot of these things. Your adaptation of Der Weltkrieg, were you putting that into Tabletop Simulator or Vassal? I don't remember.
Tabletop Simulator.
Okay, so you're now to the point where you've progressed as a player up to the point where you're actually starting to build some stuff to be able to play in Tabletop Simulator. Talk a little bit about your journey from, hey, this is kind of cool, thanks for inviting me, Jim, to, hey, now I'm building something to share with the community.
Yeah, so for me, it's really trying to find people to interact and play with, right? Where I live, rural Northwest Ohio, there's not a whole lot of people around here that are into the gaming like we are. So for me, it was taking something, a game I like, trying to put it into an environment that I like to play in, and wanting then to put it out there and try to attract some other players, some interest, and just pushing myself on a skills level. I had to learn some Lua, you know, had to learn how to build some counters to put into there. So from that point of view, too, it's just been a creativity point that I wanted to take on.
So the audience understands a little bit, like you work in the IT world, so you have a little less reluctance or hesitance to get your hands dirty on a keyboard and start playing with some stuff and having to figure out you know, okay, great, I got to learn some Lewis stuff here, but that's not something that's so far removed from any of your existing skill sets that it's, you know, like teaching a pig to dance or something. Like, this is still something within the realm of...
I'd say yes or no, because the things I do today have very little programming relevance, so
okay.
I'm just trying to get into that mindset, you know, after having been out of programming for quite a while. It was a little bit of a challenge, but, you know, unlike 20 years ago, there's tons of thousands of YouTube videos out there and other resources you can go out there and find that says, here's how you do this.
Yeah.
You know, and get, yeah. In fact, on Steam, there's a gentleman, Mr. Stump, on Tabletop Simulators Workshop, who's put out a ton of how-to stuff and little sample pieces of code and dice rollers and things. You can go and pull those pieces out. You can go see what he's done, how he's built those. He tries to document it inside the code, you know. So there's just a ton of resources out there to go out and learn how to do these things with.
I've long joked, but it's not really a joke. The last code I wrote was in 1986. and which, one, means that I'm old. I got that. But it also means that it's been a while. It's good that there are resources there to help get you you into that. When Jim first called you up and said, or when you first threw your hat in the ring and said, sure, I'll come play on a Saturday night with you guys for Saturday Night Fights, what was your initial thought behind it? Was it, hey, this is a chance to just goof off with some friends? Or, hey, this is, you know, I'm really jonesing for some board gaming. Let me figure out how to do this.
Yes, all the above. No, seriously, I think, Jim, back when I first joined, which I think was the beginning of last year, you were, I think it was All the King's Men.
The Men Who Would Be Kings.
Yes. I think, you know, you were still into that time doing those games. Mm-hmm. You hadn't moved on to the Command and Colors yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think you'd done any Blucher yet. So that's, you know, so that's when I got into it. And frankly, I didn't know what to expect. I've never done miniatures gaming before prior to that. And frankly, just kind of being a novice history person, I just kind of like getting in there and seeing new eras and places that I never really had much exposure to from a history point of view.
Your involvement with the whole tabletop simulator world was not necessarily a COVID-induced decision, that this is something that you'd been looking for and engaging with for a while, or looking for the alternative. Because like you said, like, you know, out in the corner of Ohio where you are, never mind board gamers per square mile, like, there's not a lot of people per square mile out there where you are.
Yeah, I'm sure if I wanted to find Warhammer people, I could find plenty of those, but, you know, yeah. Just...
Yeah, but they're Warhammer people. Do they really count?
Yeah. Actually, Jim had been doing Saturday Night Fights for a bit of a time before that, and the Steam sales were still going on. I think Tabletop Simulator was on sale still for $10. I'm like, eh, what the heck, for $10, I'll pick it up. And a couple weeks later, I got on one of Jim's games, and been pretty regular since then.
There's a lot of folks that, you know, not necessarily the first hit was free, but, you know, a lot of people are like, yeah, for $10, what do I got to lose?
Yeah, exactly.
Turned out it was, you know, a half a decade of your life.
well, and it also depends on how much space you have, right? Not everybody has a ton of space. So if you wanted to do a Le Grand battle or an epic battle of Napoleonics, right, you may not have the space to set that up. Or you may have the space to set it up, but you can't leave it up for 3 to 4 days, right? You may be lucky to have it up for a couple of hours before the wife tells you she needs the dining room table back. So something like Tabletop Simulator can give you that environment, that ability to set it up and keep it put together for a long period of time, even if you don't play with somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a good point in terms of using Tabletop Simulator just for solo play, to be able to just set up and do your own thing. You know, you mentioned the space aspect of it, and that's a good point. Like, we've had our boy JD on the forums. You know, he posted his little renovation where he was able to build his game corner in the corner of the library there in their place over in the UK. He had long complained about space being an issue and not being able to leave stuff up on the table and having an issue of being able to set up and leave something up. And I don't know that JD's ever really much messed with Tabletop Simulator, But, you know, who knows? Maybe that was the solution to some of his issues more than it was necessarily renovating the house. Now, what he ended up with looks very nice. Like, he shared pictures of it on the forum, and so we can see some pretty good looking, the good looking outcome of building that table into that corner of the building and everything. But maybe Tabletop Simulator would have been a viable solution for him had he kicked it around ahead of time. So who knows?
And I can still see the aspect of wanting to have, you know, the physical pieces too. You know, there's something about that side of it also, to have both, I think, at times. But
really has to be emphasized that even though, for example, I don't like Vassal, right? That's not a secret. I've said it many times. That doesn't mean if you like Vassal that you should stop or that I'm saying you're stupid. No, you just like something that I don't. That's hardly a big deal. And I've said much the same thing about miniatures games and whether, you know, how you should play them. By the way, you know, Mike, I'm going to tell you, you are actually part of one of the most popular Saturday Night Fights of all time, a sprint over the Blood River from January of 2019, which is approaching 2,000 views.
Yeah, so that probably had to be one of my first.
So you've been at this for a minute, my friend. And look, there are people who I know, for example, that, you know, I've chatted is the wrong word. I've exchanged information with Richard Clark, the Two Fat Lardies, very briefly. You know, he's come and seen our Saturday Night Fights when we've done Sharp Practice, their game. He was impressed with what he saw. He liked the way he complimented particularly the Dragoons for their excellent gentlemanly behavior and ladylike behavior, which I'm sure we would do under any circumstances. But you can see that in somebody who, he doesn't make minis, he doesn't sell minis, but even just someone who writes miniatures rules, they want the craft. They want to fashion the minis, research the paint jobs, do the paint jobs. And I've certainly done that and found a love of it. And if that's what you do, this is only a part-time thing. For someone like me, my principal problem, probably more than anything else, well, I'd say it falls into two areas. Number one, I've got a very nice dining room table I can put stuff on that's quite some size. It's not big enough. Ping pong tables are better for openers, okay? That's what I want. I have built, because I got challenged to do it online, I think it happened during a Saturday Night Fights, somebody came along and said, you know, I really want to play the Battle of the River Plate with Fletcher Pratt. I went, I bet I can build that faster than you can, and I did. And that sucker is 15 by 15. You know, where are you going to put that? As Mike was saying, my the game we built for Le Grand Battles, Borodino, is 15 feet wide by, I think, 8 feet deep. Where are you going to put that?
You know, I've got a basement I can put it in, but how are you going to reach across the whole table just to reach things
without
knocking 20,000 other figures off, you know?
And related to that, the biggest game of all, we're going to, in October, sign-up's still available, we are going in October to play the Battle of Leipzig. That battlefield is 10 feet by 8 feet. Like Mike said, unless you're planning on getting into your stocking feet and crawling on top of that table, I don't know what you're doing.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to suspend Velcro over the table like that spider rig from the Mission Impossible movies, where he's sort of dangling over the map, and everybody will call out commands for him to move stuff around for them. So,
exactly. Right.
Which is fine until he's got to go to the bathroom. Yeah. So
that's what you got to do. And so if you're into it for the aesthetic, if you love the tactile pieces, if you love building minis as so many do, I love you and I understand you. You are the best. But number one, I got a problem with space. And number two, I am way too attention deficited, if that be a word, with respect to historical periods. I love just about every period of world military history, and given the choice, would play a game in that period. We've done colonials, we've done World War One dreadnoughts, we've done a crazy World War Two skirmish game, we've done a ton of Napoleonics using multiple systems, and we've done ancients, and I've got games I've built that we haven't had a chance to play yet. I would never ever be able, absent winning the lottery and being able to employ a entire company of painters to fulfill my needs, be able to play this many games, and then add to it the fact that I can play it with friends. That is incredibly hard to beat. I mean, it's a heck of a thing to know that we can staff a table with 8 people. That happened. You know, we had 8 people playing the LGB Battle of the Marrow. That's really, really cool. And to have it happen just on an average Saturday night. So
this
is the way forward.
And that was without a whole lot of significant active recruiting. That was just, hey, who feels like playing and, you know, got eight hands raised.
Well, look, I mean, I sometimes, and Mike and I have talked about this, you know, we threatened to turn Saturday Night Fights into the Blucher Network just because people love it when we play Blucher. We're going to play some tomorrow. But I put out, and again, this was a dare, one of our regular viewers popped on a couple weeks ago and said, you guys going to do anything for the Battle of Lake Erie? And I went, what? And I admit it. And I told John Fever this. He's a good guy. And he's a wonderful viewer. And a shout out to him. But John says, you're going to do this? I'm like, John, what the hell are you talking about? What? We're in the middle of the Battle of Vimero, and you want us to do what? Yeah, the anniversary is September 10th. I went, oh, okay. And you could use Fighting Sail. And I thought he meant Fighting Sail, which Mike and I and some others have played with, as a miniatures game. No, he meant the old SPI 1982 Fighting Sail, sort of their response to Wooden Ships and Iron Men.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, okay, we can do that, sure. And Felker and I sat down and kind of pounded it out. And I posted on the forums, all right, this Saturday, since Thursday is the anniversary, who wants to come on over? And it's filling up like you can't believe. People want to come, and some guys who haven't come over for other games have said, oh, you're playing boats? I want to play boats. Let's play boats. So it's really a joy to have people suddenly shout out and say, ooh, okay, you've dumped that stupid Napoleonic stuff. Now let's play something I like. And I'm like, great, let's do it.
Well, and the other thing is with boats, it's like with a Commands and Colors setup, with those epic scale setups, you're sort of capped at eight people. Like, to go beyond eight people, you're really sort of breaking what that set can truly do. I'm not saying you couldn't wrangle it, but that's not really what it's designed to do. At that point, you're house ruling a lot of stuff. But with boats, like, you can put 20 boats on the map and give each person their own boat, right? So you could have a far larger number of people should you feel like wrangling that many people.
Yeah, I think, though, the problem, though, is this is one of the battle limitations with Tabletop Simulator right now, is it's capped at 10 players.
Okay.
I have a theory. I have a theory on that, Mike, and a way to get around that. I think we have a way of getting around that, but you're absolutely right. That is a limitation. Yeah. And I will. No, it's crazy.
Yeah. And keep in mind, and Jim, you can correct me if you feel I'm wrong on this, but TTS is still kind of a young product, right? There's still a lot of development work going on with it by the developers.
Oh, I think they had no idea how much this would take off.
The other day, Monday morning, Vance and I, Barthart, he was showing me how to play World of War 85, Storming the Gap. I had the whole Kickstarter kit. I really hadn't had a chance to sit down and really start learning it. Lock and Load Publishing put out Storming the Gap on Tabletop Simulator. Now, the key to this is they only include the very first scenario. In order for you to do the other scenarios, you have to have the scenario book from them. So you were talking about how to monetize so forth. That may be one way to be able to try and monetize some of this. But we're talking afterwards. So first of all, Vance is up in Ottawa, right? I'm down here in Northwest Ohio. Tuna jumped on to watch and kind of learn along. He's in Boston. You know, just kind of a somewhat spur of the moment type of thing. You got three guys from three different parts of the country. You know, one up in Canada, two from different parts of the U.S. could all get together for 2.5 hours and play this game. You know, Brent, you're down in the Raleigh area. How easy is it for you to jump in the car and just go 15 minutes somewhere if you wanted to play an actual game with somebody for 2 hours?
You know the answer to that, actually.
I mean,
for me, it's not hard, but I fully admit that I am an anomaly. I'm a bit of an outlier here. The other caveat to all of that is my cousin's husband's a wargamer, and he lives literally a mile from here. I could walk to his place in 10 minutes and go sit down and play a war game.
Sure.
But I'm an anomaly, right?
Right. But part of my, as Vance and I were talking, though, part of it is we could maybe have just jumped on for a half an hour and got a couple of turns in real quick and saved the game and then come back to it later also.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
You know? Or, you know, for those of us living in the northern U.S., you know, we have about 4 months of the year where the roads can be really crappy, and you know what? You don't want to bundle up. You don't want to get on icy and snow-covered roads and go somewhere for a short period of time of gaming sometimes. Yep.
And we also know we can drink like a fish while we're playing and not worry about it because our beds are 50 feet away. So
that's right. Now, Jim, you're talking about taking away some of the paperwork side of the gaming.
Yeah.
You know, I look at this with what I'm doing with Dale Velt Craig. On the table side of that, there's a lot of counter stacking to show units being beat up and taking casualties and stuff. In Tabletop Simulator, I was able to digitize some of that by being able to put the strengths on the counters themselves and being able to update those and change them.
There you go.
Now, some people will say, well, but that's not really, you know. But for others, it's like, now you don't have to worry about these stacks of 20 counters high and trying, you know, and hoping that the things don't tumble over and all that good stuff.
For example, on Fighting Sail, in the actual game, this is an SPI game where they didn't even have the money to insert a roster in the game. Okay, this is when SPI was getting ready to be done, and they didn't even have that much cash. So they say, well, keep your roster on, keep this track of this stuff on a sheet of paper, on a scrap of paper. Well, I can use a tooltip.
Right,
I always do. And in addition, you're supposed to record how many movement points a unit has. Well, guess what? It's by Mr. Stump, who you mentioned. Always a shout out to the big mighty Stump. Because look, none of this happens. Hey, everybody, if you're in TTS, throw Mr. Stump a couple bucks on his Patreon. You owe him. Without his flex table, none of this happens. I can't tell you how much I owe this guy. I'm never going to tell him.
And you want to know something funny? Is Vance and I were playing World at War. And they used the Kraken table.
Oh.
We got done, and I said, so what happens when you get to a scenario that uses more than two maps? And Vance is like, yeah, you got to shrink that down. You got to shrink the counters and stuff. And I said,
No.
Why didn't they use Flex Table? So guess what Vance is working on?
Vance
has never done any of this, and he's now going to – and now he's taking on the challenge of migrating this all over to Flex Table with so that he can have like the – and I think it's a four-map or six-map scenario – all on the table together, you know.
He and I have talked about that forever. The idea that, you know, for this year and a half, 2 years, that this is his goal, is he wants to see that happen. Yep. And I told him, I said, I'm in. I will play. I'll film it. You know, I'll broadcast it. But I ain't going to, you know, I would happily play that and be taught that. That would be so great to have a 10-player game of World at War. And I'll guarantee you, we get David Heath to come in and kibitz with us and all this stuff. It is also facilitated, I think, to your point, Mike, I think it's really facilitated community. The Armchair Dragoons have broadcast a video with the man who wrote Essence Resultat, right? We did a 3-hour video with him showing how his game works. You guys can demonstrate, and I know that David has done this. It could be demonstrated how to play World at War, and we can video that. Everybody knows who follows the channel knows Red Sacks. Red Sacks is a regular viewer, and if I play a game and I post pictures of it and I've not done a video of it, he gets mad at me because he's like, "Well, you didn't show me how to play this. I want to learn how to play this game." And the really crazy part is when we go back to these classic games like SPI. Everybody now wants to know how to play Fighting Sail. You know, how does it play? How does it compare to Wooden Ships and Iron Men? How does it compare to Close Action? How does it compare to Flying Colors? All this other stuff. And it has opened up a wonderful, wonderful community of gamers, some of whom... And maybe it's the story of wargaming in our time. No. We're not the same numbers as our playing Wingspan or Hanseatic Wheat Orgy. Doug Miller's Hanseatic Wheat Orgy. You know, it's none of those games. But from this part of Ohio and from that part of the Carolinas and from this part of Milwaukee, we've grabbed little handfuls of people and we're coming together as a virtual community and we're playing games, which I thought was the whole point of the exercise.
Let's be honest that having lost all of our summer conventions to the plague, like, we don't pull off the virtual Dragoons assembly without Tabletop Simulator or similar toys, right? And so we had been talking about a Dragoons assembly where we just wanted to get a bunch of us together to sit around and play games for a weekend, you know, get a pair of suites at the Embassy Suites or something, or find some local place that we could work with where we could set up a couple of tables and just play games with ourselves and drink scotch all weekend. Because those are two things we don't get to do at Origins, which is the only other time of year that we're all in the same place. Right? We can't actually game with each other because we're busy supervising and teaching games to everybody else, and we can't drink scotch because it's the Ohio Convention Center. We're not allowed to have alcohol in there. So trying to bring those things together, we have had plans on the drawing board for over a year now of just trying to get a bunch of us together with a handful of our friends. And, we've talked about, like, David Thompson was going to try and join us at some point. Some of the dudes from D.C. were going to drive, because we were going to try and do it here in the Raleigh area where we've got some game stores to help support what we were trying to do. And so we were talking about getting a handful of these folks together and having some fun. And then the plague hit. And then all the conventions went away. And so we said, well, let's take the Dragoons Assembly online. But then it turned into, well, let's turn this into the best kind of convention we can try to do for everybody else. And it worked. You know, it wasn't the best thing we could, you know, the absolute best we could ever do, because it was the first time we tried it. Like, we learned a bunch of lessons as a part of that. But I think folks had a good time, and there's no way that stuff, like, that something even close to that happens without these digital tools, like a tabletop simulator or Roll20 or Tabletopia or Vassal or whatever, and we used all of those that weekend. It doesn't happen without those tools. And so having them, you're right, it's absolutely made a difference for the community as a whole. And, we've got the dudes from Europe tuning in on a regular basis, you know? So.
Well, yeah, and, well, shoot, we're going to have a guy in the game on Saturday who is staying up till 1 in the freaking morning his time to play Fighting Sal.
Which is nuts.
Which is nuts, but he wants to do it. I mean, but look, this speaks to how some folks like you, Brent, you're in a great spot, and you should be thankful. I mean, once upon a time, I lived in a blessed world. I could take a bus back, that's what it was, to the north side of Milwaukee, to go to Napoleon's, go figure, and go to the basement and play with thousands and thousands of little minifigs. That's all I ever wanted to do. I didn't want to play any other games. I painted them, I based them, and I shoved them around a table with guys four times my age, and I learned the rules, and I loved them. And so it was awesome. Well, they closed. And right now, there isn't a board game store, much less a war game store, within a 45-minute drive of my house.
Yeah. Yep.
There isn't a war game store within an hour and a half. I'd have to go to Madison to the last square.
Yeah.
You know, so that's insane. You know, so this is a lifeline to a wonderful group of people. And let me tell you what else, going to your point, I'm kind of scrolling through my Steam feed on Tabletop Simulator, and I'm just amazed at how many people have followed this wonderful core group, you know, Mike and Vance, and some of the guys, Doug, who were all there at the beginning. Now we've got, I'm counting one, two, three, oh, there's James Starrett, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. There are 10 guys within the last month that have all gone over 100 hours on Tabletop Simulator, who I know were brought into Tabletop Simulator because of Saturday Night Fights.
Well, just in the last, what, month since we did the virtual con, you've picked up, what, three or four more people?
Yep. We got Jeff. We got Command Tank Real Regular. And I know he's been around, but he's joined into this.
Dalinar hadn't joined much earlier than that.
Yeah, Dalinar's in that group.
Murdoch. Murdoch?
Yep, Murdoch's in. So these are great guys, and they've joined other games. Some of them have joined the Blood Bowl tournament, completely not TTS related. We got Griffin 26, Zeke, Will Wheaton Bicycle. These are some great guys that we've had a lot of fun with, and some of them, yeah, like you say, some of them came from the virtual convention, some of them came from just being around. But it really has been a lifeline to folks, and I think it's going to persist. I mean, will people go back to playing head-to-head? Of course they will, because it's a social activity, and we crave that as human beings. But will there still be a strong space for this type of gaming? I have no doubt.
Yeah, well, and we had proven that before the plague had hit, right? What was your—the first—so I know you and Doug had been playing some of the John Tiller games where you were live streaming those, like each one of you live streaming your own side of the game as you were playing head-to-head. Like, I remember some of those from a while ago, but the early TTS stuff that you had first started playing, well before the plague hit, I mean, we got to be talking middle of 2018-ish?
Yeah.
I think it was shortly after Origins of 2018, wasn't it?
I'm actually looking at my live stream, and let's just sort it by date added.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to pull it all up, so I'm going to let you do it.
I've got it right here. So the first one we ever... Is this really the first one we ever did? Is this it right here? No, it's not. Somehow the video is wrong. Because I've got one here that is, you know, for example, Saturday Night Fights, where we first took Fighting Sale for a spin. Right, it was between Christmas and New Year's, 2018. One of everybody's... A really, really popular game was our first game of What a Tanker.
Yep.
That was just 3 days before Christmas, 2018. So, yeah, I mean, we're heading on two solid years of this. And, yeah, that's long before the COVID. And these have hundreds upon hundreds of views. The other thing I noticed with utter horror is that this game of What a Tanker was played on the Kraken, which I would never do today. but, you know, it's things you learn. And look, the quality has improved. Going to Mike's point, there are people evolving new pieces all the time, new techniques. There are people who are much more gifted in code. I mean, shoot, just look at what Lazy Boy has done for... If you are an American Civil War person and you are not in TTS to play the wonderful game, by the way, a game that is done by the guys at Little Wars, Altar of Freedom. If you've not seen Lazy Boy 6mm voxel sets for Altar of Freedom, you are missing out. They look like little Lego, but he's actually got real terrain that's better than any you're making, I promise you. And it's a great rules. I've made terrain, believe me, in this. And it's so great. And again, so I can't say it enough, play the game. I have hundreds upon hundreds of hours now playing games with my friends. And if that isn't the point of this hobby, I don't know what it is.
Yes. Last January 2019 was when I first started using TTS, right? I've got 242 hours into it in 20 months. And almost, I would say at least 220 of that has been actually playing games with other people. You know, about 20-some hours or so have been me working on my own modules of it. And I pay $10 for it. That's like, what, 4 cents an hour?
Yeah, it's...
That kind of bang for your buck. And the price per hour is going down every time I play.
Yeah.
Now divide that by one... Let's see, what's my latest? 1,543.
So it's more bang for your buck than you're getting out of Call of Duty, right?
That I like doing with Saturday Night Fights is all the folks that jump on and follow us live on YouTube. We have folks from Europe that are on. It's well past midnight there. We have folks from the West Coast. And there's just a lot of chat going on. Sometimes about the game. You know,
more
we get
often
Hasdrubal.
Not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we get somebody like a Hasdrubal that will jump on, and you know, you've referred to him and said, "Has what's the rule on this?" You know, or you know, somebody will speak up and say, "Hey, is this right?" Are there last questions? Or will you know, some parts of the game people kind of go off and have discussions of other things, and that's fine too. But again, it's just bringing this whole community of people that have this interest together. You know, how many people do you know that are willing to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning watching us play a game on YouTube?
And if I'll make this serious for just 1 second, and thanks for saying that, Mike, because I agree with you completely. I was on my Twitter feed, and I just noticed that we'd clicked over 500 followers on the YouTube channel where I broadcast. And one guy posted, "Hey, congratulations, you've been a real lifeline to me during all this when I can't go out and game. I watch you guys every week, and I make sure to watch all the videos." And so it was sobering. You know, to realize that there's a lot of people that are yearning to go back to just something approaching normalcy, a time which, you know, look, you can look at wargaming, especially tabletop wargaming, as very expensive or very cheap. I know a lot of guys that'll spend thousands and thousands of dollars on figs, terrain. I might have been one of those guys. but I also know guys who, they paint very small armies. They bring them along just so they can be a part. Or some of them just show up at their local gaming hall and know that somebody will let them play with an army because they want to have an enemy. And yep. they see it as these guys run fixed incomes. This is their hobby. This is their outlet. And especially in places like Britain, which still has a very strong club scene, this is their big thing. And to lose that is weird. It would be very, it has been hard. And I'm not saying, and I think all the virtual gamers, and it's certainly not just us, no way it's just us, but it's been a nice side effect to give people an outlet, as Mike say, to stand around and, you know, some days we're arguing about the history of the game we're watching, and other nights we've been talking about the habits of our wives, which is funny when my wife shows up and has her own opinions.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a little tougher for you when she's there.
Yeah, she's... so it's... You know, it, to have that sense of community and to give people that is, and frankly, I just, to me, it's no less than when I turn on my computer and I said, I borrow from you, Brent, it's a sense of, all right, everybody, let's go down. You know, we're at the bar, we've grabbed our drink, maybe we've had some chicken wings. Let's all wipe our hands off and walk downstairs to the basement. Let's see what I got set up for tonight and let's have at it.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and that's special.
I'm going to shift gears here slightly because we've got, you know, 10, 15 minutes left in our show here. But you mentioned the guys from Little Wars TV, and there's something. This was originally not part of tonight's discussion until, Jim, this is all your fault, until you went and posted that video from Little Wars TV today in the forums, today as we're speaking, right? It's a week and a half ago by the time anybody's going to hear this. So you'll have to go back and sort of look for it a little bit. But the guys from Little Wars TV... posted, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, yet another screed about how tabletop wargaming is dying and it's, you know, we're too old and we're not bringing any new young blood and all this other stuff. And again, the Little Wars guys are minis focused, but many of the, you know, many of those assertions do still apply to us over, you know, their cardboard brethren over here in Chitland. And the whole issue of tabletop wargaming is dying, blah, 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 we've rehashed those arguments to death, and I'm not going to bring them up again here because, again, we've only got 10 minutes left. But this week, they, to their credit, something that I thought was very good on their part, they came back around and said, all right, so what do we do about it? And that, I thought, was really good on their part. They didn't just bitch about stuff. They went looking for solutions. They said, all right, if we accept the premise that it is dying, now what? And so I really commend them for doing that. They went out and solicited some of the, you know, important people in the tabletop minis hobby and said, what do we do about this? And Jim, you're right. There were a couple of points in there that were fairly self-serving and a little ludicrous of the top five best ideas that they pulled in. But you guys, Jim, I know you've seen the video. Mike, I don't know if you've seen it yet or not, but Jim, you know where I'm going with this. One of the things that they brought up was, why aren't we televising something like this? Why don't we have a show? And the analog that they used in England was the sort of model railroad show around the, you know, the different model railroad hobbyists. Here, you guys have 48 hours, go build the coolest model railroad XYZ on a reality TV show. And look, tabletop wargaming is never going to make a particularly compelling reality TV show. It's just not. some of the pissing and moaning that happens in the tabletop wargaming community might for an episode or two before the audience realizes we're all assholes and turns us all off. But the games themselves... I don't know as would necessarily make a great broadcast show, but here's the big but in all of this. Will Wheaton had a syndicated role-playing game on TV for the better part of like 5 years. TDB Network was broadcasting this stuff over the air. Now, it's a YouTube-based series. It's got real production values, right? There's multiple cameras set up in the room. There's chyrons across the bottom explaining what some of the action is. They animate the dice showing up on screen separate from just the way the dice roller looks in Tabletop Simulator. But Will Wheaton's got the money to throw behind a production company to make this happen. And the TDB guys, the TDB Network, said, hey, that's kind of cool. Do you mind if we put it on the air? There was actual tabletop role-playing being broadcast over the air on television in the U.S. You didn't have to have cable to get this.
Right.
Are we going to approach those production values? Hell no. Right now, you're simply live streaming, a bunch of friends sitting around having a good time, and that's plenty good enough, right? You guys, the main reason you're doing this is a whole bunch of y'all want to play. You're not doing this because you're trying to become Mr. YouTube star of tabletop wargaming, I don't think.
I don't know what that looks like. But
grab a mirror because you're it, dude. but the point...
It's like, yeah.
Well, I was just saying, the point is you've not tried to turn this into any level of a professional show, and yet you've got a hardcore following that's showing up just because you're playing games and having fun, and they get an opportunity to interact as well, which is kind of cool, but... Simply watching guys having a good time and then having the opportunity to try to interact doesn't explain the extra 1,500 views that you pick up after the, for a 2-year-old game, right? Clearly there's some kind of appetite for this. Clearly there's the ability for the production value to be, increased some, right? Obviously not over the top because there's a limit to what you could do in real time. This isn't live sports. You're never going to have those kind of production values, but you could do something a little more in terms of cleaning it up, editing, whatever, after the fact to do a little more with it. There's clearly a bit of an appetite. And it's not that, you need to be the guy to fill the niche. That's totally, I'm not trying to sign you up for extra stuff. That's totally not what I'm doing here.
Yes,
but
he is. Don't let him fool you. He is.
Look, I'm not going to tell him no if he starts doing it. I'm going to be his biggest cheerleader. But clearly there's an appetite for this, there's an audience for this, there's a niche for this, and if the Little Wars TV guys are even halfway right, there's a need for this. And so how long before we start seeing whatever different... I mean, we're already seeing, like, Alderac is live streaming Tiny Towns every Friday with celebrity players through their Twitter feed. Like, this is happening on a regular basis, and they've got real production values. At what point do we finally get a wargame company that's going to step up, whether it's a wargaming organization, whether it's a publisher, whether it's a club, whether it's somebody like us, whether it's Mo. Gary's broadcasting stuff on his YouTube channel 4 nights a week that he's got live games going on. He's mostly using Vassal, not TTS, but he's interacting with the audience as he goes and getting a ton of views after the fact there as well. At what point do we finally get the at least semi-professional wargaming show, whether it's, hey, we're going to teach you how to play this game this week, whether it's, hey, we're going to explore this particular thing this week, that we go beyond just what the guys at the Players Aid are doing, hey, let's explore this game for 15 minutes with the overhead camera shot and everything, but somebody takes Tabletop Simulator and some legitimate production software and says, we're making a TV show out of this, and goes beyond... like you said, look, this podcast was always supposed to be sitting at the bar, turn on a tape recorder, listen to some gamers talk. That's what we've been after all along. We're not a professional interview show. And even when we have folks here and we do something a little more professional in the interview, there's a lot of jocularity to it, and that was always intentional. That's what your Tabletop Simulator live streams are very much like, right? It's eavesdropping on a bunch of friends playing a game, having a good time. But if somebody were to try to professionalize this, are we already moving towards what the Little Wars guys are saying we need? I'll shut up now. Jim?
Well, I think there's two things they're talking about. I'll do the second one first because I think it's more that one's simpler yet more is harder. The fifth suggestion that they make, by the way, number one, let me say this. Number one, I love Little Wars TV. They're a champion for a hobby I love very much. I love their games. I've stolen from their games wholesale. I will continue to steal their games because I think they're wonderful researchers and gamers. So they are awesome. I think their number five idea is chimerical because that was the idea of creating a network of us. Put us with Gary and with Storm of Steel, who's definitely a friend of what I do. And he's a wonderful dude.
So kind of like the Wargame Network, the Wargame Network tab that we've got on the front page of our site that links to a whole bunch of comparable-minded YouTube channels that we embed on our damn site. Is that what we're talking about?
But to build it as a network in YouTube, because you could do it. you could say, hey, here's this, here's this, here's this, and make it a one-stop shop for all the wargaming you could ever eat, you know, and who gets in and cross-pollination and organizing, you know, for example, there should be competitions, right? Storm of Steel should play Armchair Dragoons. Armchair Dragoons should play, you know, should go over and play an Aardwolf's Lair. There should be a friendly series of matches. We've talked about that. Shoot, we've talked for months about having Ross McGee's Old Meldrum Wargamers fight us at one of Ross's own scenarios for Blücher, stuff like that. But there's the other idea that they have, which is, what does a wargaming TV show period look like? And it's interesting because I actually did watch some of the videos of this train show. As like, my God, Britain is different from America.
Oh hell yeah!
And I think it has to. And I think it has to do with the fact that in Britain, you've got the BBC, which is publicly funded. You know, they can go. It's high end PBS. I didn't like Time Commanders in its second iteration. I thought the earlier version was okay, but use it. And a part of that was the engine they used, which is Napoleon Total War, which I'm not a fan of. But I also didn't like the presentation, and I also didn't like the fact that I know for a fact that actual people who were wargamers or historians were specifically excluded because they knew what they were doing. They wanted people who would make bad mistakes. Now, I said, first of all, you beg the question that wargamers can't make disastrous mistakes.
Yeah, I was going to say, all they had to do was invite me, right?
I mean, I said, like, give us a chance. We will make the biggest mistakes imaginable. So I'm not worried about that. But that was just a very cynical choice. I go back. And if you ever have a chance to watch it, to the great, and I realize I'm the only, you know, I might be one of 10 guys that would watch it, but if you have ever seen the Battleground series, it's all available on YouTube. I don't know if you guys all remember the TV show, The Equalizer.
Yep.
Remember Edward Woodward?
Yep. Yep.
He was the host for this.
Okay.
And this was Patty Griffiths. This was Charles Grant. This was Stu Asquith and some of these classic wargamers from the Golden Age gathered around Mingy's tables playing Waterloo, Gettysburg, Edgehill, Chalons, and Edward Woodward, like a guy at the PGA Tour. It would seem that Mr. Griffiths has decided to commit his guard. The stick is to measure ball shot versus grape shot, and a certain number of dice will result in a certain... It's amazing! It's all on YouTube. And they did this. This was on the air on the BBC 40 years ago. Now, it would have to be hyped up. It would have to be far more melodramatic. But of all the suggestions that they made, the one that I'm most intrigued by, I will say, is the idea of trying to create... And you've got to... You know, we're game designers in our guts. We think about games. How do we game a thing out? It would be building just such a thing. Even as a one-off, I think it would be an absolute hoot. I you know, I'll give just one example. I thought that the game of Men Against Fire, SLA Marshall's Men Against Fire that Mike was a part of, was going to be an unmitigated disaster. I really did. I'd wanted to play this darn thing for 20 years, never had a chance. Finally had a chance to play it. Look at the video. It was amazingly good, I thought. And it was good. Why? Because I think the viewers had a chance to make fun of the participants because they couldn't see, the participants couldn't see what was going on in the tabletop, and the viewers could, and they can enjoy that. So something like that, there is something to it. I just don't know what that is. So I'm not saying no.
Who are you gearing such a service toward? You know, Jim, you and Doug and I have talked about this before. People kind of that do gaming kind of fall into two groups, right? There's the gamers who could care less about the historical piece of it, right?
Yep.
And then there's the historical people that are gaming because they want to try to see how can I do better, right? And I think you have to get through that premise first and then to decide. So if you're doing a live stream like you're talking about and you're having commentary, what's the commentary? Is it, oh, you know, on what the person's doing? Or are you going to give the commentary as to how it was really done and how it's differing? I don't know if that makes sense or not. You know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
You know, and you could actually take both approaches, right? You could do that. But I think, first of all, the hobby has to realize there's two different camps almost. That's my thought.
I think you're right, and I think you're almost looking at you know, for look, we're we're gonna end up sketching this whole thing out in real time here on the podcast, right? But you're almost looking at a two-man booth, right? You're looking at a play-by-play guy describing what's going on the table, and he's your, for lack of a better term, although it's fallen into disfavor as a derogatory thing, he's describing sort of the min-max thing, right? How is the game engine being manipulated to make certain things happen on the table? This guy's moving here in order to get this advantage from this piece of terrain, looking this direction against this unit. Like, you've got the rules expert doing kind of the play-by-play thing. In the meantime, your color guy as a historian, I keep saying guy, right? Guy, gal, I don't care. Your color person is the historian who's describing, well, you know, historically, that hill looked like this, and, you know, this unit occupied it, which gave them this advantage, or this other unit occupied the hill but didn't actually press the advantage and then got their butts kicked. Let's see how this, you know, unfolds here. And you're almost looking at sort of the two-man booth doing that play-by-play bit, and that's very different than sort of what's happening with you guys on Saturday Night Fights, where Jim's kind of sort of doing some play-by-play, but he's doing a lot of rules explanation as you guys are playing, particularly for people that don't know the rules as well. And I think one of the challenges you would end up with in a show kind of like this is, like, football, you've got the game. Like, you can hit mute, watch the game, see what's happening, and have a pretty decent understanding of it all. It would be very tough to do something like that, even if you just put a fixed camera angle on Tabletop Simulator somewhere, to truly understand everything that's going on without hearing the participants in addition to the commentary team. And that would be a tough juggling act from a production standpoint. Jim, yeah, we probably need to, like, tag your wife in.
I'm not getting close to suggesting this, but both OSB, which is my streaming software, OBS, which is my streaming software, and Tabletop Simulator allow for multiple camera angles.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could theoretically lock in overall table view and all this other stuff. I've thought about that.
Well, then something like StreamYard gives you four different boxes on screen at once.
Right, and so you can choose what you're streaming. And to say, hey, I'm, you know, because, look, I'm running the game, right? And so as a consequence, I'm jumping sometimes to a very tight shot of a unit and losing context. But shoot, just go back to Battleground. Just watch that if you want to understand the challenge. And I've watched those a lot. I love them. But I keep forgetting as I'm watching them that I'm a little bit of a wargaming obsessive. And I have been for 40 years almost.
That's kind of like saying the Great Wall of China is a big pile of bricks.
And so I'm looking at this thing, and I'm seeing things that are immediately familiar to me. I know exactly what they're doing. And I always wondered, it's like, when this showed up, wherever it showed up in the BBC rotation, what in the heck did Mr. and Mrs. Britton think was going on? Did they know? Was this familiar? Or was this some sort of weird voodoo, and they were letting them in? It ran for four episodes, you know, so I guess I don't know. But, I mean, I think the idea of creating a show that puts and Little Wars did this, and I give them immense credit, and it was a huge success. They played a massive Gettysburg game using Altar of Freedom, and they went online, and they asked people to make, I think, a total of six tactical decisions by Twitter, and based on those six tactical, or strategic, I should say, operational decisions, the players had to change their strategy. You know, at Gettysburg, is A going to happen or B? Okay, it's B, so, well, we got to deal with B. It was a great idea, and I think it was a big success. That's the sort of thing that I think works, and it's certainly something I've thought about in the context of maybe the Waterloo campaign, but there's that.
Yeah, so understanding that this all takes a lot more work than any of us are necessarily willing to commit in the next 6 weeks. What it really struck to me was this is the groundwork for exactly what the Little Wars guys were saying, or at least one dude on Little Wars was saying, hey, we should really look into this. It's something similar to what I've wanted to do for a while at Origins, particularly with the CPXs, in large part because I think the CPXs are very hard to explain, but very easy to understand once you're actually watching it happen. And you know, everybody that's ever played in one, I think, will kind of understand what I'm referring to in that context. I think these kinds of games are a lot of fun to play in, obviously, but being able to show the enjoyment factor while they're being played and to help spread that love, I think, is kind of a big deal. And I think that would be really cool if we could do that. It's long been a passion of mine, and you know, Jim, you've seen it for many years. Mike, you for a handful. And let's face it, there's no shortage of people on our forums and in our community that think I'm batshit crazy for it. I want to help expand the potential pool of wargamers. And we'll have another discussion later on in the season about, you know, the relative health of wargaming as wargaming. But it's something that I've wanted to do for a long time. So when the guys from Little Wars are saying, hey, how do we do more for the hobby? My ears are perking up, right? The radar's going off. I'm paying attention. This is something that matters to me and that I'm legitimately interested in. And so if this is something that I can help kick that can along a little bit and help make somebody's dreams come true some for that, I'm absolutely willing to at least have the conversation. I'm not saying I'm going to dive right in and go do it. Lord knows I've committed to more than enough things that I've probably overcommitted to. But I'm, you know, I'm at least going to have the conversation and see if I can't help pull the resources together and try and help make something like that happen. This is right in the wheelhouse of stuff that matters to me, at least, even if not so much to other folks. And so, you know, my ears perked up when you shared that video today, and knowing that that was the topic of conversation tonight, I like, we got to talk about this some tonight. Mike, you're sort of accidentally getting dragged into this a little bit, and I'm sorry, but
no, actually, I wanted to comment on that just a little bit.
Yeah.
So I did the Kickstarter for World at War, right?
Yeah.
I did. I've done my first two P500s with GMT. I did my first two pre-orders with Compass Games this year. Honestly, if I wasn't doing some of the gaming with Tabletop Simulator, I don't know that I would have done those, because I had these games sitting here, and I'm like, I can put them on the table. I can play solo, but how much fun is that? I've never bought Command & Colors. I don't own it currently, but I played a ton of it on Tabletop Simulator. I'm at the point now where it's like, that's going on my short list for Christmas. I may never put the stickers on the blocks, but from my point of view, it's like, I've gotten so much enjoyment out of this, I at least want to go back and give some reward back to GMT and the designers and all those involved in it by purchasing at least the base game and a couple of the expansion pieces. You know, so just doing the Saturday Night Fights and just doing the Tabletop Simulator, people say, well, how do we monetize that? Well, you get people hooked into a game, and at some point, people like me say, you know what, I want to go out there and I want to reward the people that did all this work at some level. Maybe I don't buy $300 worth of the product. Maybe I only buy the $60 or $120 of pieces of it. But, you know, I think everything you're talking about with a TV streaming and all this can all play into that. How do you get people interested in this? I don't know. Just kind of rambling there at the end, I guess.
Dude, we ramble. Like, that's our thing. That's what we do.
I know. I'm listening.
Well, but honestly,
if you stop rambling, we're going to cut you off.
that's a pretty big point. I mean, at the end of the day, when we're all done here, how are you going to get people in when they can't see something? You know, because let's be honest, I will put my love of the Command & Colors system up against anybody. But until you have sat down and played it and seen why it's cool and why it might be interesting, is it really, you know, the boxes aren't that good looking. They're not. They're just not.
You know, the other thing I think, Jim, that helps, you know, in that video that you posted, they're talking about trying to get new people involved, and new people will sometimes be overwhelmed and not know how to get started.
Right.
One of the things with Saturday Night Fights, how many times have we played Command & Colors Napoleonics, right? And we still have to take a pause sometimes and go look up a rule, or somebody on the chat on YouTube will say, hey, what about this or what about that? You know, for a veteran like yourself and others, we still have to take timeouts and go double check a rule or something. And we don't get into these arguments about it, right? We discuss it, you know, but nobody gets heated. Nobody stomps away or anything. And I think, you know, if you're a new person, you're kind of being encouraged, you know, that you understand, hey, they've done 50 of these games, and they still have to take a little bit of a timeout sometimes. It's okay. I don't have to have it perfect. Or they make a couple tweaks to the rules because sometimes the rule maybe doesn't always make sense or whatever. You know, so I think from that point of view, too, you're encouraging people to say, hey, you don't have to be perfect at this.
Yeah, that's you just true. Have to be good enough. So
yeah.
I think we may leave it there for this recording, for this podcast. As that is a very good note to end on. Any note in which we can point out that we're not perfect is probably an appropriate note to stop with. but the, you know, certainly a lot of food for thought here, at least for us, I hope for the audience as well. You know, Tabletop Simulator has really, and we're using Tabletop Simulator as sort of verbal shorthand for any of these distributed online tools, right? Vassal's been around a while, but also Roll20 and Tabletopia, off the top of my head, those I happen to know about. But even, like, the guys at Historicon, at HMGS, they were pointing cameras at a table and using Zoom to talk to people to move real figures around, right? This was Adapt, Improvise, and Overcome. And the whole idea of distributed gaming was shoved down a lot of people's throats as a result of the pandemic. But I think it's opened a lot of eyes as to what you can do outside of a pandemic situation, just to be able to play games with folks that you're friends with that don't happen to live down the street. And I think that's a great thing. That let's all generally agree that is a great beneficial outcome for what's happened here, trying to find a silver lining in any cloud. That's been a net plus for wargaming and probably tabletop gaming as a whole. On top of that, it's definitely built a little more of a community around the Dragoons, right? You know, Jim's got this regular fan club. Like, as soon as he goes live, there's like 14 people always tuned in. And we could probably sit here and start naming them if we really wanted to. But after the fact, even... I mean, Jim, you're getting literally hundreds of views on these games after they've been, you know, they're not live, they're not chatting back to you. Folks are dialing in and watching, and that's cool, right? It's there's obviously enough of a love for the hobby that folks are willing to watch videos of somebody else playing the game, and it's weird because we think that's, you know, we're just sort of shrugging on, yeah, that's kind of cool, but. Like, our kids are watching other people play video games on Twitch. Why wouldn't somebody want to watch someone else play a tabletop game on YouTube? So that is definitely, I think, breaking new ground. Like, that one's a little weird. We didn't really see it coming, but it's kind of cool. And so there's nothing wrong with that. How do we now expand that footprint such that we can leverage this to showcase how cool this hobby is to other people who might find some interest in it, but for whatever various and sundry reasons haven't been exposed to the world of tabletop wargaming. And that's a totally different, I mean, that's a podcast and a half all by itself right there. So I think you've got something really cool here, and it's great to see the way it's grown over the last 2 years. I mean, that's pretty awesome. And, you know, again, you as sort of the ringleader of it all, Mike as a willing co-conspirator, and anybody else out there listening who's played along with us, and that's cool, right? I don't have a better word for it. It's cool.
I am very sincerely grateful for everybody that's been along, has played, and has made both Saturday and Wednesday and everything fun. And it'll already be posted by now. But it's like I have something to look forward to tomorrow night. Velker, my son, is going to take on Dalinar in a Blucher fight, and then on Saturday we're going to get together and play ships. That's awesome.
Float some digital boats.
Float some boats and sink a few, I suspect.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah, and along the way, hopefully introduce people to... And one of the points we always make about the SPI games, and I think it's one of the reasons I think if I were to make a suggestion for this 5 thing, it would be, hey, go back. Go back to the beginning. Remember Featherstone. Remember Grant. Remember Dunnigan. Remember Balkans, you know, remember the beginning and how we started in these games. And frankly, how many of them are very simple and very welcoming. And I think you're going to see that with Fighting Sail. It's a nice, straightforward, simple game. I think people are going to like it.
I think if you're going back to the beginning, I know we've done 1824 Kriegsspiels in person. I know you've experimented with wanting to do it on Tabletop Simulator. I want you to pull out and do H.G. Wells' Little Wars on Tabletop Simulator some night.
That's, would you believe I have a set for that? So.
Oh, I would absolutely believe it. Like, I would be stunned if you didn't.
I had to find the cannon. Because remember, those shots are determined by cannon fire. So.
Yes.
So we have such things. I also have a complete battle from Charles Grant's famous book Charge.
Okay.
So these are all classics of the genre, and I think that if we're talking about getting new people in, part of the answer has to be approachability and simplicity. Which balances the love of toys, which balances the love of history, which balances the love of play, all in one happy thing. And I think you're going to see Fighting Sail does that. And quite frankly and quite secretly, I think Commands and Colors Napoleonics does that brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, final word is yours.
Final word is mine.
Put you on the spot.
Ooh, very
here.
Heavy.
Take us out.
No pressure.
No pressure. I guess I probably already said my final word previously, you know, where Tabletop Simulator can be a gateway for the publishers of the tabletop games themselves. Games that I hadn't thought about or even known about before, or Blücher, I'd never heard of Blücher before, I'll be honest, you know, things like that. They've got a tool here that can bring people together from literally all over the world, play together, get interested in something, and then maybe put a few dollars down to support these folks.
Yeah, yeah. All right, with that, we're going to say goodnight. So, Mike, thank you for jumping on here and joining us, and have fun out there in the sticks. You know, we joke about I can walk 10 minutes down the road and have a war game with my cousin's husband. I think you could walk 10 minutes down the road and still be on your property, can't you?
No, not quite that bad. I am literally surrounded on all four sides by bean fields right now, but I can be out off my property in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Just walking. So.
Just walk slower.
yeah, just walk slower.
Jim, thank you for joining us very much, especially since you're in mourning for your Bucks there. We appreciate you taking the time. Not that it's hard to twist your arm into being on a podcast. So.
It's always a pleasure. Come on by. Saturday Night Fights, typically 1900 Central Daylight Time.
And we will link some of the Saturday Night Fights there for you to this podcast. So just scroll on down below a little bit, and you'll see some of those links. But we have a very robust organizing area in our forums where we discuss all manner of Saturday Night Fights and other online games. Jim mentioned the Blood Bowl tournament we've had going on. We've got other folks actively soliciting people to play in other online games. Some of them are playtesting. Some of them are experimenting with digital adaptations of tabletop games. Some folks are just bored and want somebody to play with. Like, I totally get it. We've got a whole organizing area in our forums for where to find those things. But make sure you follow the Dragoons and follow Jim on Twitter, and you'll find all kinds of places where you can jump in and be a part of those tabletop simulator games. So, thanks, guys. Thanks, audience. Really appreciate everybody tuning in and giving us a listen. And stay tuned. Who knows what the Armchair Dragoons are going to come up with next. So, good night, everybody.